Well, folks, welcome back to Rethink Real Estate. Today, I have Brittany Bowers, and Brittany just does a phenomenal job today of walking through the journey of real estate. I think that the really curious part about this and why you should stick around for this episode is that we go in and dive into the partnership that she has with her husband, Chris. Chris was a realtor previous to her getting in, or whilst she got into real estate, he was already established to some extent. But he was just this lone ranger where she came in and implemented the operational structures and that journey. They were part of a Zillow Flex where they built the team up as big as they could, and then all of a sudden decided that this is not what they want. And then they've scaled back down to be more efficient. Some of the processes and operation side of things and thought process that people have been through, we speak about lead generation and how it's a bad way to build a team, and the different relationships that now they have with people within their team that are paid employees. We talk about some life hacks and things like that as well. Really great episode. Hope that you enjoy it. Welcome to Rethink Real Estate. My name is Ben Brady, and this is a real estate podcast aimed to deliver sales strategies, marketing tips, and business insights from industry experts and myself to build a listing-focused business for the future. Let's get into it. Brittany, thanks so much for joining us on Rethink Real Estate.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, so I guess that first and foremost, and I don't want to like have anybody have expectations of different of something different in the episode or taking away from your energy, 4 a.m. this morning is when you got in.
Yes, 4 a.m. is when our heads hit our pillow in our house. So we're a little sleepy today.
Well, that's, do you know what? Hey, I usually find like if there's this haze over us and you've just got to absolutely get on with the job, some of the best work happens. It's amazing what you can push yourself to do. So there's no doubt that today, yeah, you and Chris are back on things and going to be doing great things today.
Yes, it's keeping me busy for sure. And my phone was blowing up today. So I'm like, okay, this is good. This will keep me on track.
Isn't it always the way when it's like, hey, I just need a little bit of a reprieve?
Absolutely.
So I'm fascinated for the team to that obviously our loyal listeners that get to meet you today. We've also got an interview coming up with Chris, who is your husband and also a business partner. So the benefit of this, I really do see for a lot of people, is that you guys have fallen into the content category of real estate, but also running a really successful real estate business in the Scottsdale, Arizona area prior to sort of jumping into that. First things first, like let's go through a little bit of an elevator pitch on yourself and how you've ended up in the journey of real estate.
Yeah, sure. So Chris and I have been together for probably about 17 years now. And the whole time he's been in real estate, I actually used to own a franchise called Kumon. It was a math and reading learning center for kids. And so that's actually what my previous life was like. After I closed that down, I actually started working at a local brokerage here in Arizona in the corporate office. And I was putting together affiliated business arrangements. So between title and lenders and trying to get access to our agents and setting up meetings and opportunities for them to meet our agents. And so that's kind of where I was living for a little while. And Chris was like, man, I feel like if you could just jump into our business, we could scale this. And he was getting really bogged down at that time. He was a single agent, didn't even have like a TC. So he was he was kind of blowing up and I'm over here building this other person's business. And so he's like, let's get your real estate license. I was like, okay, let's do it. For me, I wasn't able to take vacations. I could see my husband. He's like living his best life every day, even though he's busy, but he's like, kind of getting up when he wants to. And, he's like, hey, do you want to go to Huntington Beach this weekend? I'm like, well, I can't because I get 2 weeks a year of vacation. So he's just living his best life every day. And I'm like, man, that sounds great. So I ended up getting my real estate license and joining him in early 2019. Prior to this, though, I had always kind of helped him in our business with like certain marketing pieces. So I was always somewhat involved, but now I was really like, okay, we're going to take this to the next level. I'm going to kind of take over operations so that he can go do what he does best, which is converting. Yeah. And so that's kind of where we started. And then that thankfully went pretty well. And so then we needed more boots on the ground. So I kind of stepped away from operations. We hired an assistant and we both just kind of went out there and went after it.
So give us the understanding of what you've got today. So you guys started off, it was just Chris sort of grinding away at real estate. You had you sort of understood it to an extent because you're really working in a real estate business prior to that. Mm-hmm. But then coming into it from a cold perspective, I'd love to talk about what you did in his business that sort of freed him up. And I just want to talk about that first. And the reason why is because, you know, at the end of the day, there's probably people listening to this at the moment that feel bogged down. They probably don't even have a TC. Their operational structure might be an absolute mess because they're that individual person. What did you do to help Chris sort of free him up?
Yeah. So the first thing that we did is we tried to figure out what was going really well in our business. And what was going really well was the amount of referrals that we were receiving. And so in order to reach that level of referrals that we were getting, we had to make sure that our client experience was always top of mind. And so for Chris and I, you know, we looked over what he was currently doing for his client experience and what he was getting bogged down with. And a lot of it came down in the very early stages to like paperwork, right? Like TC stuff, like the easy stuff that like you can easily leverage out. So it was really creating a systematized I guess, checklist kind of here's all the points during the transaction prior to getting them under contract. What are all those steps looking like? Once we're under contract, what are all those steps looking like? What are our touch points with these clients? You know, what kind of gifting can we do during this time to make their experience even more elevated? And so we looked over our, I guess, our process, and we call it just, you know, our client experience. And we're always working to make that better. So that's the very first thing that we did. We became very systemized with how we bring someone through a transaction with us. And we kind of like coined it like the referral maker because it just, it was just kind of like a good little tool that kept us in line. No matter how busy we were, we could ensure that everyone had the same level of experience.
Can I butt in? Yeah, I just want to talk about absolutely. That because it's something so simple, Brittany, that you've just mentioned is putting a checklist together. Like so many people try and overcomplicate the nature of what their business needs in order to go to the next step. And I could probably put myself in Chris's shoes for a moment. And as you're helping him come up with that process, you know, of that checklist of just the things that need to happen within a transaction, rather than him being intuitive and knowing what to do next, it actually gets put on paper so that therefore you can have somebody execute it for you. He probably felt this really heightened sense of, you know, weight off his shoulders that now it was on paper and somebody else knew what it was in order to then be able to execute it. And too many times, I think that agents go the other way around. They employ somebody to do it for them. It's like, no, watch what I do and then let's put it as a checklist. It's not like, no, let's think about this collectively together and do it ourselves. So I think that is one of the things that definitely is a takeaway. But then also the identification of referrals were the best source of next business as well from a client experience perspective. That's definitely a massive takeaway from that. So after you did all of that and you sort of put that together, what were the next elements?
So a couple other things that we did too is we tried to streamline a couple of these things that we were like almost reinventing the wheel every time we did a transaction. And it sounds so simple and silly, but just the email templates that we would send out. So we didn't have any, right? So we're handwriting all, because what we do in our business to help make that client experience a little bit better, which I'm sure a lot of people do, but you know, after the phone call, you know, when we were just like, hey, this is, you know, your offer's been accepted. These are the next steps. We go over it all on the phone. Obviously, we want to put our voice to it. But we also back it up with an email because our goal is never to have like the spouse have to relay like what we said to them. Like they don't know, you know, like they're probably just excited and maybe not taking away all the key points. So we put everything in an email. Well, we are making that email every single time. We're like, why don't we just make a template for it? Like, and then just change out the information. And so it was just like little tiny things like that, that we, once we had the checklist and the overall structure, like what can we simplify and what can we streamline? And then eventually what we started doing is like highlighting, okay, like this is something that neither of us need to do. We can hire out for this. And that's kind of actually how we made our first hire. We just highlighted the things on the checklist that like weren't really skill-based, I guess.
So that basically formed a job description for you to advertise on. And like, because that's what so many people get daunted by is when bringing somebody on, it's like, well, what do they do? And again, it's that reverse type of thing. They bring somebody on in order to solve a problem when they actually should have the problem identified for the person to solve before bringing them to the table like you guys did. It's like, hey, this is what I need you to do. Okay, if you can think of a better way to do it, let us know. But in essence, that's what we need you to do. So that's unbelievable from a process perspective to see you guys go through that. You know, hopefully that's enlightening for a few people.
Yeah, and it was funny too, because Chris is, he's like our risk taker in our relationship, and I'm, you know, like compliant. I need security. So it's funny because like I was not ready to hire at this time because I was like, it's not enough. It's not enough for 40 hours a week. And, you know, what if we lose them because they're bored? Or, and so it's just funny. He's like, no, we're just going into it, which I'm so grateful that he is that way because I'm not. And then I feel like I probably hold him in on certain things where like, we're like, we don't need to do that yet. We can hold off on that for a little bit. But I think it's a good compromise between us. But yes, you're exactly right. That created essentially our job description and what we were looking for. And I probably, I mean, we didn't even hire pretty quickly after we did that. We kind of just kept that visual, I guess, up. And it was like, okay, when we become too bogged down, like this is the first thing. And then you know when the time is right for you.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, so then, so you've put those systems into place or just the process into place. Mm-hmm. Was there anything that you used outside of the person that you put on? Was there any type of technology that you used to help automate the individual steps or anything along those lines? I know a few people have spoken about Trello and a few people have spoken about Airtable and different programs that they've sort of used in order to help with that automation or to keep track of where a property or where a relationship or where a you know buyer or sale might be in that particular step of your process.
Yes, absolutely. So, because that was our next biggest thing is when we take this out of office or if we don't have someone here, how do we ensure at a glance where everything is? So we were really big believers on having a CRM. So we have a CRM that all of our database lives in. We do keep extensive notes in there. But as far as like the transaction, once they're under contract, we use Asana. I don't know if you've heard of that. It's almost like a project management system.
And Asana, so you can, Asana.
Yeah. A-S-A-N-A. Yep. And Chris loves Trello, by the way. So if he could run his whole life off a Trello board, like that's just like how his brain clicks is just like dragging things to the next column. Yep. We haven't found the best way yet to use that. So we use Asana, but it's great because we can just make, you know, this is a buyer template, new listing template, pending listing template, and everything's in there. We just enter in the dates. I can look because our office isn't working on the weekend. So if I need to know where we're at in a transaction, I can easily log into there and see what has been done, what hasn't been done. Right. And most things can wait till Monday, but it's good for me when I'm, you know, getting on the phone with a client to just know at a glance where we're at with that. So we use that. And then, for, you know, file management, we use Dropbox, and then, our brokerage, you know, has everything in the cloud. So that's kind of what we're using. But I think Asana is our biggest, management system that we use for transactions.
How was it to sort of get up and running with Asana? Was it heavy lifting? Did you really have to put a lot of work into it in the beginning?
No, actually, because we had the checklist. We had the paper checklist. Yeah. So we just were, you know, pulled up on dual screens and just typing away and making those templates. So no, it probably only took us a couple hours to implement all those, but because we had done the prior work of the checklist.
Yeah. There's a lot of different systems that are out there from a personalized perspective. Like I know people that have built systems out of Monday to automize things, but it's taken them 12 months to actually get to a point of actually using it. And most people lose the momentum in trying to keep the tenacity around getting that system sort of figured out. You know, they end up giving up. So it's interesting to know the different types of things from a heavy lifting perspective. So now you've got the process in place. You guys have now put an incredible foundation down to basically scale as big as really you guys want. What does your team look like today?
So our team today is pretty small. So we have, it's Chris and I, we have our office administrator, who's also a property manager, by the way, who's also my mom. So, but she's great. Yes. And we have a showing partner that we pay salary to. So he's available to all of our buyers to show properties. And then we have two other team members that are on our team. About 2 years ago, we had a team of maybe about 14 total. We had a Zillow Flex account at the time. And so it caused us to scale for that reason. And then once we no longer are part of Zillow Flex, we kind of reduced down the team. So I have a couple people on the team. They don't do a ton of transactions every year, but they need the support and they're just our really good friends now. So we're like, yeah, just stay on the team. It's fine.
That's right. Well, I think that, you know, this leads me into a rabbit hole here, Brittany. So forgive me for like trying to intrude on what you guys have done in the past, but I think that there's some really good learnings, like meeting you and Chris, you're very genuine people. You definitely are people that, you know, at the end of the day, we got a great vibe from, and being Lister and I got a great vibe from when we met you guys at the Metrics conference. And, you know, you get invited to that sort of circle of people based on the perspective of that you're doing a great amount of business, but you're doing the right level of business and you're doing it well. So I'd love to understand a little bit of the journey that you go through, because it really does, for lack of better terminology, really annoy me out there at the moment when the real estate community, all they're talking about is grow a massive team, grow a really big team. You know, that's the way to leverage your business the best. And when realistically, the people that you're telling to run a team, you know, they can't even probably lead themselves, let alone other people. So I would love to go through the journey that you guys went on of that explosion of that team, and whether it be the Zillow Flex experience, whether that's a good or a bad way to go. I'd love to just hear about all of that.
Yeah, sure. So it's interesting because we're here at a test market out here in Arizona almost all the time for new companies. So when Zillow was rolling out their Flex program, anyone that was performing at a high enough conversion rate got automatically put into the Flex program. And what that is it was a 35% referral, but you didn't pay for the initial lead. So the leads were coming in for free. And then they started, I think, with like, I don't know, maybe 1,000 agents. And then it just kept dwindling. So the ones that were continuing to get the lead flow were the ones that were continuing to grow. And so we had a rep that we would meet with weekly, which was like, when you work for yourself and you're an entrepreneur, you're like, I don't want to meet with you weekly and hear your thoughts on the market. They're like, why aren't you putting more under contract? I'm like, this is like 2020, 2021 at the time. So it's like, so hard to get someone under contract because just no inventory.
So my naivety, Zillow Flex is buyer leads. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah. Buyer leads. But I mean, some of those leads are sellers too, but they initially come over as a buyer lead. Okay, and good. So we were just managing the account for ourselves at that time. And it was just Chris and I doing that. And I really think in like 2020, we barely saw each other. We were like ships passing in the night, like going to showings all the time, because you just pick up the phone and they want, like, the script is you go show them that house right then. And actually at that time, that was the only way you were getting a house for your client, was by showing them like day one of the market. So
especially in your marketplace, like your marketplace, like I think that, you know, it's one of those marketplaces, and please correct me if I'm wrong here, I just have an opinion set on this. It really reminds me of one of those, it's hyper cyclical, but then also it's really hyper cyclical on the marketplace as well. Like I feel like when there's hype in real estate, you times it by two in Arizona, or certainly where you guys are anyway, in that Scottsdale area.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely feels that way. I would probably agree with you on that.
Yeah.
And so we were kind of maxed out. And so our rep was like, you have to grow, you have to add some team members. So the very first thing that we did was just reach out at our previous brokerage we were at. We're like, who wants leads? Like, we'll give you leads. You don't have to give us your other stuff. Just like, we just need a bodies, because the more bodies we had on our group, the more leads we would get. And ultimately we were on a good split with them, so it made sense for us at the time. And then that ship just like never stopped. Like they're like, grow, grow, grow. And so we're scaling at this like tremendous rate that is like not sustainable at all. Like we're having the back end of things. I'm having to order marketing for all these people. I've never had to like do that before. It was just a very big learning period. And then I'm having to keep all these people accountable. And I like, Chris and I both hold ourselves to like a pretty high standard for accountability. And so it was very difficult. Like when you're bringing in people that like you actually don't even really know that well, and then trying to hold them accountable, and you're like, oh gosh, this is not what I want to do.
It's funny how many people are just so far out of alignment with the standards that you set for yourself. Like again, you guys are high performing individuals, and it's almost and again, it's some work that definitely that I do on a regular basis. It's almost frustrating to deal with other people on like certainly when they're representing your business, and it's kind of like, are you serious? That's the standard that you're keeping here. so it's definitely, especially when there's an expectations of moving as quickly as what things were moving back then.
Yeah. And I think the hardest part for me too was like, it also wasn't like for a lack of effort on really anyone's part. Maybe like a handful, but like for the most part, they were good agents, but it was just like, I'm now responsible for their actions. And it was just like, I don't want that. Like that's not so we kind of thought about it and we're like, man, this is like really causing us to scale at a level like we don't even feel comfortable with. And like the money was there, but like we were still, you know, when we look at our P&L every month and every quarter, we're still the top producers, right? And so we're doing all this extra work and like the money just wasn't kind of like worth it at that time. So eventually it kind of scaled. We kind of scaled back from Zillaflex. We're like, I don't know if this is right for us. And that's hard to walk away from when that's bringing you in. I think when I just did the numbers, I was teaching a class the other day and I was doing the numbers. Zillow accounted for 39% of our unit count in 2022. It accounted for 9% of our net income. So like tremendous work, crazy, crazy unit amount and like not that much. So we're like, we just look at the data and we're like, we gotta quit this. So
can I just a couple of questions that lead off that, because you know, there's so many people out there at the moment that would like, it's probably one of the key questions if you're an owner of a brokerage or you're starting a team or whatever it may be, is that what leads can you give me? And it's funny, you know, because I don't know how you started in the business with Chris and I don't know how Chris started with his leads. So that'll be something will be interesting to go through in his interview. But but the nature of how I started in real estate was, no, you've got to learn how to hunt first. Mm-hmm. You have to actually go out there and you have to learn how to prospect in all the different ways that you can prospect rather than just be given these leads that ultimately, I don't mind an idea of a lead that if you understand that, yes, you might get something from it later, but the real purpose of that lead is to create a long-lasting relationship that if they end up buying a couple years from now or they end up selling their property that they buy, even if it's not with you, that then you establish that relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, I get that, but I just find that the real estate community now is actually, well, what can you give me for me to join your team now? And it just feels like the relationship starts off at the wrong stage. Did you see that at all with the relationships you had with the people?
Yes, like you said it perfectly. That's exactly how it was. And kind of, I mean, it was our fault. Like that's how we presented it to the people at first. And it probably wasn't until like a year into doing that program where we're like, okay, we actually have to take we have to take a cut of like their other stuff, because I'm supporting them fully through every transaction, right, and giving them, you know, advice and paying for their marketing and like putting their signs up and stuff. I'm like, no, like we deserve a piece of that. Like we're mentoring them. I had one agent, she was brand new. Her first year closed 17 deals. Oh, wow. Like great, right? She crushed it. None of those were from her network.
Would never have done that without the assistance of you guys. Like somebody, right. There's a few people that can start off and do that. There's no question. Mm-hmm. But even if she was on her own buying those Zillow leads, there still would have been a level of learning curve that would have went into that that probably wouldn't have allowed her to do at least half of that volume of deal in the beginning.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that was like, that was pretty eye-opening for us. But yeah, I agree. Like I think that the hunt isn't there for everybody, especially people that came up during these last couple of years. And no, I'm not trying to shame anybody or anything like that. But I think like even we lost that too. That's how I can say this, because I'm like, we lost a little bit of our hunt because business was just like flooding in. It was almost like effortless. And especially since we had such a long track record of our, you know, past clients, and Chris had been in business for 17 years. So it's like we still had a good heavy flow. But it was just one of those things where, yeah, like you just almost get entitled. And then when the market shifts, you're like, oh, I need to do some different things now. So now
you guys have realized that this is probably not worth the time that you're spending on it from a volume to actually execution perspective or income. Mm-hmm. Making that change, like I'd love to hear about, do you remember the conversation that you had with Chris at the time around, hey, we need to get off this program? Because I could throw a rock out my window at the moment in Newport Beach, and I could land on many agents that that are just doing Zillow leads. That's pretty much all they subscribe to, and they're wondering why their business is going backwards and not growing. Like how did you guys remove yourself off the hamster wheel that it feels like they put you on in the Zillow program?
Yeah, I think the first thing for us was we're really big about analyzing our data and our numbers. So I would say to anyone out there, if you're feeling a little bogged down or like maybe it's not worth it, it's probably not worth it. So put the numbers out there and really analyze those numbers. Like it was shocking. We're like, what, 39% of our units will lose next year, but we'll actually only lose 9% of our net income. Like that's an easy choice to make, because now I'm not having to manage people. At that time, also, Chris was learning from someone else who had been doing the showing partner model. So we're like, why don't we just keep this in-house? We have our showing partner go out and show and kind of provide some leverage for us in that way. And so that just made so much more sense, because we're like, we can pay him a salary. He gets a kicker on everyone that he closes as well. I think we pay him 10%. And it was just so much easier, because it's like, wow, let's keep our production really strong. I don't need to worry then about, you know, making everyone else accountable and having weekly meetings with them and making sure they're doing the open houses and reaching out to their database. Like, I don't want to do that anymore. I already have to do that for me. So I didn't want to do that anymore. And I think that that's hard to walk away from, because we were like, you know, our unit count was great. It was fantastic. We were getting all sorts of, you know, recognition for it, but it didn't matter to us anymore. But like that.
There's two parts to this. I want to double click on the showing partner. I'll do that as a second part of this. But the first part is, isn't it funny where you probably see this in the real estate community, having been through it, Brittany, and through the networks of people that you get to mingle with. Isn't it funny how somebody will go through and they probably do the data analysis, and deep down they know that it's a waste of their time doing what they're doing, but they're so insecure about not having something to do or feel that they're busy that they just continue to make that bad investment of time into that program or into that situation, hoping that it's going to be better at the end. You know, it's one of those things that in the entrepreneurial circles of podcasts and stories that you listen to is that's one of the you know, fail fast is one of the biggest, you know, theories that is out there. And it's something that I think that you guys need an incredible amount of a credibility when it comes to or credit for being able to remove yourself from something that is like I don't know many people that have said that they've gotten off Zillow when it wasn't a financial problem, you know, of having to pay the money. Like, I know Zillow Flex is different, that you don't have to pay the money up front, but I don't know many people that would remove themselves from that situation, having to actually look in the mirror and go, is this right or wrong? So I just really want to make sure that we point that out here on the episode. I think that that's something that a lot of people need to absolutely take into consideration. But the second thing here is that moving and transitioning into a paid role, a salary role, it's usually something from a financial perspective most people are afraid of, is they love the nature of real estate because it's that 1099 person that essentially you don't have to pay. It's only you, when you get paid money, they get paid. But then people like to complain that the relationship with the 1099 person isn't one of which they do what they want them to do. It's like, well, hang on a second. They don't really have to when they're not paying them. So, So how did you find that transition? One, from a financial perspective, but two, is that what's that relationship like with that person? Is it 10 times better than it was with the other 1099 employees or 1099 people? Or how has that all worked?
For us, we really, really enjoy that. And I know Chris loves to talk about this topic too, so I'll let him chime in on his interview. But I will say a couple things though. So for our showing partner, it's fantastic because he not only goes out and shows, but he also will help us prepare contracts. He does a lot of the preliminary research. We're all in our system that we use, our CRM. Everyone works up the same number. So all questions that come in, he handles, he does all that. He does all the scheduling. So it's just, he's incredible. Like, we love him so much. So he's been very, very good about that. Now, for us, though, you're right, it is hard and it's a little scary hiring someone when you're not even sure if it's going to work out. Because I'm sure every realtor who's listening right now is like, I could never give my clients to somebody to show. So that was the biggest like hurdle to get over, is like, you're not the best at opening doors. And when you phrase it like this, like, they're just opening the door. We're still on the phone with them after they see it. How did you like it? What did you like about it? It's just providing us a little bit more leverage. And then I think it also holds us at a higher level of skill, right? So our skill is not getting you into the properties. We have someone that is available for you no matter what our schedule looks like. Day and night, like, he'll go show you. And so it's almost like a next level concierge service for them. Like,
yeah, we would hate you to miss out on a deal because we couldn't get there in an appropriate time frame for you to see the property before making an offer. Yeah, no, it's a really good point.
Like, Chris and I were just out of town for 5 days for a wedding. Like, what are we supposed to do? Tell our clients like they can't see anything? And I always tell agents too, I'm like, if you were out of town, you would use somebody. It's the same thing, right? So it's the same thing. So what we just, in our heads, how we thought about it, we're like, okay, we're not committing to the $32,000 right now. We're not giving him a check for $32,000. We're giving him a check for, you know, whatever his bi-weekly check is. So we're like, just make it to the next check and we'll just keep evaluating this as it goes on if we want to keep writing this check every 2 weeks. So that's initially how we made that jump, because I think when you see a salary, you're like, oh my gosh, like I have to write all this. Like the money's already spent, right, in your head. And so, but I think when you break it down, like this is only what I'm paying like for this month, like yeah. I can commit to that for this month. So that's kind of how we broke it down in our heads.
Question, just on that, first things first, and again, I don't want to steal any thunder away from Chris because as you said, he likes to talk about it, but I think it'll be a great refresher for everybody to hear this again, is that there's part of when somebody's really great at a role, there's part of that because of the nature of who they are. You know, so, and it sounds like you have a really great person in that position, but how much of it do you think is that person being great at what they do versus how much is it because they're a paid employee that they actually have to get a job done and they have to show up at particular hours and actually be, you know, be present within a particular time frame. Like again, I don't want to take anything away from the person that's doing that job for you, but you know, what type of percentage do you think, like, is it 80% that they are the person they are, or is it 50-50 because of the nature of how you've structured it financially anyway?
You know, I think it's been a growing thing for both of us, or for all three of us. So for Chris and I, and also for our showing partner, because in the beginning, we weren't really sure like how much to give him. And so it was strictly just showing houses. And then we're like, oh, we can probably ask him to do the research on these new builds. And so it's like piece by piece, I feel like we all trained each other on how we best work and respond. So I really don't think it's like one specific thing. I think we've just really learned on like what works well, and things that didn't work well, we corrected quickly and didn't let that, you know, sit and fester. So we're like, hey, like we got to work on, let's just say like our calendar. Like he was not an agent when we hired him. We paid for him to get his license. So we were looking for the personality first. Like, would they be like, can they talk? Can they hold a good conversation? Which is hard to find. It's hard to find people that can do that.
Socially awkward seems to be more out there, you know, these days, I guess. And I don't want to sort of say these days, it makes me feel old, but I guess that, it's one of the things that I've noticed. How many more socially awkward people are there out there in the world at this point? Like, it's like most conversations are like, someone can't even maintain eye contact.
Right.
Anyway, sorry. That's a rant.
No, I agree. So we were kind of looking for a personality, and he has a great personality. He can hold a conversation. He asks insightful questions. Like, he's just good at that. So that's kind of what we were looking for. Like, all the other stuff we can train you. Like, we can train you how to use, like, you've never been, you know, how to use a calendar for work before, or how to manage your time. We can train you how to do that. So it was kind of just training on more of like skills like that, that he just didn't have, you know, before, because his job didn't require him to have that. So that was kind of more of like what we kind of trained on. But really it was more the personality that we were looking for. Like, can you just hold a conversation? Like,
that's an excellent point. And hey, look, I've got a couple of other things that I want to sort of go through today, because of, there's a few other things that I find fascinating about yours and Chris's business. You both have a podcast. You both understand the content element of the business. Not only do you guys run an incredible real estate portion of and transactional element and everything that you guys are operating under, you've then sort of made this segue into content. And I, first of all, I want to ask why. Second of all is that, how have you done in the execution of that, and what's the hard things and what are the things that people need to think about?
Yeah. So, you know, Chris started his podcast, I want to say maybe 2 years ago, and he started his more of like a passion project. Like, he's like, I feel like I have some things to say. and then he has a lot of really cool friends that do cool stuff. And, you know, you probably met a lot of them at Metrics. And so he's like, I want to interview people so people can hear these conversations. Like, Chris loves to sit with people and just like find out more about their business, you know, whether that we can apply that to us or not, but he's just genuinely interested in people's businesses. And so, that's kind of why he started his, so he could just learn more from other people and, kind of share that with the world. And that's like, if you see him anytime when he's not working, like, he's listening to a podcast, like almost always. So that's just one of his kind of passions. So that's when he started. And it's just been a great way for him to also like meet new agents. And it's, you know, once you meet new agents too, like, you don't know, maybe they have a referral coming.
Yeah,
and that's not why you do it, but like networking with people is great. So that's kind of where his started. And then mine started because me and my friend Desiree, we would just talk every week on the phone, and we're like, oh my gosh, that was 45 minutes. We just talked. She's also in real estate. And we're like, man, maybe we should just record this and just see what happens. And it really started because we went to a women's real estate conference. When we left there, we had so many friends that were like, hey, will you share what you learned? And so we actually did a little guest episode on Chris's podcast and put that out. So that way we could just be like, hey, these are all our takeaways from the conference we just went to. And it went really, like, the response was really good. So we're like, maybe we should start our own. Excuse me. And so we did. And it's so fun. Like, anytime I see that on my calendar, I just get so happy. Like, I love doing the podcast. And for us, it's a little bit of a way to reach out to a community of people that, as you know, like, real estate can be pretty lonely sometimes. Mm-hmm. I think especially too for women, nothing against the men, but I feel like sometimes, like, the women don't speak up enough at these events, right? They're kind of quiet, just taking it in. So we wanted to create a space that we could have people talk and, you know, because, you know, there's a lot of top producers that are men and...
You're 100% right though. Like, if you take a look at the same conference that we were on, which was a very interactive crowd, there wasn't a great deal of women that put their hand up, even though in the room there probably was about 30 to 40% of the room was women.
Yeah.
You know, in that sense. And I can be quoted on this many, many times. I really truly do believe that women are better realtors than what men are. they have better process, better mannerism, better everything that men do. And it is a forum that, you know, like, we have a part of our group that's called Inspirational Women that definitely needs to be brought to the forefront. Mm-hmm. People need to be given an opportunity to feel not as intimidated in these spaces as what, you know, men make it feel that way. Like, there's some of these, mm-hmm. some of these podcasts that I listen to, and there's some of these forums that I listen to. It's like, oh my God, the testosterone is at a new level.
Yeah, and it's just funny because I feel like sometimes I'm speaking with some of these women and, like, they're doing incredible things and you're like, oh, I wish you would have shared that, you know, just so other people could have heard it too, not just me. And so we kind of created both spaces locally that we meet up with agents and we just do masterminds. And sometimes we have a topic, sometimes it's kind of a free for all, but it's been really fun. And so we kind of have been using the podcast as, like, another tool in that community. So the response has been really good. It's been really fun. And I never thought ever, like, I would be in this space, but I'm so happy to be there because I feel like we're filling a gap that maybe isn't there. So,
well, we'll make sure that there's links to all of the, both podcasts into this episode at the show notes, and we'll definitely be endorsing it in every way, shape and form. But as we round out the episode, Brittany, I always love to go into, you know, something a little bit non-real estate related. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about podcasts that you listen to. Okay. Mm-hmm. Also books. I want to talk about life hacks and things like that just quickly. What would you say top books, top podcasts that you listen to just in general? It doesn't need to be real estate related, but what's the information that you consume?
Yeah, so some of my favorite books, I love Cal Newport. So Deep Work, So Good They Can't Ignore You. I love those books so much. You know who else books I love, actually? And I don't know if everyone does, but I do. But Ryan Serhant's books. I love his books so much. Okay. And I know he's a really funny, out there character, but he's hilarious. And I like to listen to the audio version because he narrates it. But he has some really good tidbits and takeaways. Actually, some of my, like, life hacks come from one of his books. Just basically, like, buying back your time. Like, so for one thing, like, I read that book and I was like, okay, there's a couple different things I can do. I can order this, like, meal service, because at the time I was so busy and it's like, okay, we want healthy meals. Like, I'm just going to order a meal service for us. What else can I leverage in my house, you know, that, like, I don't need to be taken care of anymore. And so it was really about, like, creating some leverage in your personal life so that your mental capacity can take a minute and breathe. Because I know I get overwhelmed by, like, my space. So if, like, my space is not tidy or if it's cluttered and I'm like, oh, I just can't think, right? So it's been kind of nice to get some of those things off my plate. I think really, like, podcast, I do listen to yours. I know it sounds like kind of like brown nosy, but I do listen to yours.
Do you know what I love when guests are on and they're like, oh, and Rethink Real Estate's great. It's like, yes.
No, I really do. I was listening to you on the plane, actually.
Thank you.
Yeah. So yours is one of my ones that come up. I like Real Estate Rockstars. Let's see, what are some of the other ones?
I just want to make a note on something while you think about it, is that, mm-hmm. doesn't it make all the difference when the author is the person who narrates the book on an audiobook as well.
Oh my gosh,
like there has been books that I've never ever thought that I would even be interested in, and I just put it on, go for a run just for some background noise, and I have no intention of listening to it, but I've found myself continuing to run just to keep listening to that person because they speak to it like not like they're reading it, mm-hmm. and it is just, it makes all the difference in the world. All the difference in the world. Sorry, but else from a podcast perspective?
Next Level Agents podcast too, which our friend Kevin Kaufman does. I really enjoy that one because he always has like totally different people on. But and then I listen to Crime Junkie too, which is not real estate related.
So good.
I know.
So good.
I know. So that's kind of like a guilty pleasure one. But yeah, that's a good one
that's
too.
That's good.
Her
for
voice is so calming. It's so calming.
I totally agree with you. Now, from a life hack perspective, I love the idea of the healthy meals and the meal services or anything along those lines. Is there anything else in yours and Chris's lives that you guys do from a routine perspective that you would say has helped along the way? Anything from a routine perspective?
Chris is pretty regimented. So even though he might not do everything in the same order every day, like he does have like a cadence and he has a pretty like strong morning routine. I am not as routined. So okay. I try to be, but one thing I am doing right now actually that's been super helpful is have you read the book The 12-Week Year?
No.
So that one, I think it's Brian Moran who wrote that. Great book. Essentially, you're breaking down like your year into 12 weeks and you almost do like these sprints, right? So it's like just get things done faster. But so you have a couple initiatives and then you break down those initiatives over the 12 weeks to ensure that they get done and you get more done in a year than someone or in a quarter than someone would in a whole year. So kind of like takes away like that, like January 1st, like they're saying like start the 12 weeks whenever you start the 12 weeks. And they go over a couple businesses they did this with and how they succeeded. So that's a great book. Me and my friend Desiree, who are actually, we do the podcast together. We're both in a 12-week sprint right now of things that we wanted to accomplish that just never seems to get done. It's like those items that get pushed away, but actually like they're almost like that critical point that like is going to get you to the next level. So that's what we're doing right now. We each have our own little 12-week sprint. And some of the girls in our, some of the women in our group also are doing it with us. So it's been fun.
That's awesome. That's great. Well, Brittany, you've been a rock star today. Thank you so much for going into that level of detail. I think that this went down a path that I won't say that I didn't expect it to, but there's definitely this element of where you guys have, you know, you've gotten into a real estate business that was established and then you've geared it up from a process perspective and then you've grown and then you've realized that that's not the way that you want to go. And now that you're in this efficiency model that you guys have created, it sounds like you're just in the ideal position to continue on the journey as successful as what you guys have been. So congratulations and thank you for being part of Rethink Real Estate.
Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. So about 75% of our audience hasn't liked, followed, or subscribed to our podcast. It would mean the world to us and it would help this podcast more than you know to expand our reach if you were to like, follow, or subscribe on any of the platforms that you're watching or listening on. Thanks again.